Hi there, and welcome to Open Mic here on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Morehead Mayor Laura White Brown. Laura, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me, Leanne.
We have a lot of things to talk about that have been going on in the city of Morehead in spite of the pandemic, and sometimes because of the pandemic. I guess the most prevalent thing that we need to discuss is the fact that the governor made a mask mandate last week, requiring citizens of Kentucky to wear masks when they are indoors or within 6 foot of another person who is not in their immediate family. Now, the city of Morehead obviously is following that directive. And how are we seeing people in the community react to that?
I would say for the most part, we've had a really positive response and feedback to that. You know, it is concerning when you see people still out without a mask or trying to go into retail, grocery shops, whatever it may be, without a mask. We're really making a big push within the community to wear masks, not solely because it's a mandate, but because it creates a healthy community and a healthy environment. And we all want to keep our loved ones, our friends, our family, our residents safe and healthy. And so I think the more that we can abide that, the better outcome we will have. We've been really lucky to have low numbers so far in our community. I hope that they continue to stay low. If you notice, a lot of surrounding communities are really on the rise, especially just even in the gateway area that we're in. So if we continue to kind of follow our policies and our guidelines and recommendations, I really think that Round County and Morehead can really stay a safe zone in our area and region.
Now, I know that we aren't really releasing a lot of information about who the people are who have contracted the virus, which, of course, it's important to protect their privacy. But can you tell me anything about contact tracing that's happening within the community? And if we're seeing these cases come from particular places, like one place, are they all together? Are all these new cases that have been happening within the last month or so from one direction? Are they coming from outside the community? Give us some information about that if you can.
Sure. You know, HIPAA really protects a lot of the information as far as who has been confirmed with the virus and how, you know, which age groups, different things like that. But one thing that we have seen with a lot of the demographics of positive cases are typically there's been one person in the family that has had it, and then other family members are eventually getting it. So I think we're seeing some spread through that. Within the city, you know, we have a rule now for city employees. If you travel out of state, you need to get tested before you come back to work. So different policies like that. I think summertime, a lot of people are traveling. And even though we're in a pandemic, it's hard. You only have limited time when your kids are out of school or whatever it may be. So I think people are still doing some traveling, and that is definitely affecting the cases statewide. Most of the cases have not been within city limits, which is a good thing on our end. Of course, we know, you know, city limits and the county limits, people cross in between. So whether or not you live here, you're in the city most days. But I do expect that we'll see kind of more positive cases once school starts back. And I think that's just because contact with children is going to be very hard to kind of contain. But I know that our schools are getting ready and very prepared, and I have full trust that they'll keep our little ones safe.
Now, we didn't have the opportunity to do an open mic in June, so I wanted to touch base on a couple of things before we move on to the July agenda. First of all, there is a lot of things that have been reopening and some changes that have been made in Morehead. And people are allowed to go in as a family into retail business establishments now. More of the retail establishments and restaurants are open at some at limited capacity. And how are you seeing businesses handle those changes?
We have seen some great response within restaurants, specifically locally. I would like to use the Fuzzy Duck and Coffee Tree as an example. If you've been in there lately, they have a no contact menu. So their menu is painted on the wall now, which is fantastic. They have the floors marked with 6 feet apart where you can stand. They have plexiglass up, as well as most retail stores now have plexiglass up as well. We really appreciate that from a community leadership standpoint. It helps keep everyone safe. Most restaurants now are allowed to operate between a 30 and 50% capacity indoors, and then they can have unlimited outdoor seating. A lot of outdoor seating has increased locally. Pasquale's, if you notice, they've put some tables outside on the sidewalks. Buffalo Wild Wings has put a tent up in their parking area so that they can have increased outdoor seating. So a lot of thinking out of the box has been required, but I'm really excited to see that restaurants and retail are committed to keeping people safe by doing that.
Now, the numbers in Kentucky have continued to rise. They've started to escalate to numbers that were even higher when we were everything was closed down. We're seeing kind of a resurgence, even though it never really got down to nothing. It did get down to the 100 level, and now it's back up into the 300 or 400 level per day as far as new cases go. Do you, in your discussions with leaders at the state level, is there any talk about closing things down again?
At this time, there has not been any talk about closing things down, but I think we will see more increased mask mandates or mandates similar to that for the protection of citizens. I know that the biggest focus right now is if and when and how to reopen schools. I think everyone is really trying to make that a priority so that we can continue some level of education and consistency for the youth, as well as with universities and colleges in the state, trying to find out which guidelines will best fit each institution. There's so many things to look at. Look at athletics on every level. We have youth league and adult league sports within the city, then you have school system sports for the public schools, and then you have university athletics as well. And each one requires such special attention. There's no kind of standard rule that can apply to everyone. So I think the focus has shifted more so from shutting things down rather than how can we adapt and still have some sense of normal within communities.
I guess one question that has been posed to me, and this is just as the mask mandate came into effect, and of course, as things began to reopen, there have been times where personally I've gone to a retail establishment and seen people not wearing masks. What can the citizens do, and what should they do in those situations?
I think it depends on a few things. One, if you are a high risk category for getting this virus, if you go somewhere that's not abiding the mask mandate, then it might be in your best option to leave there. And that's a tough decision. And as an elected official and as a community leader, that's hard for me to say as well. But I used this example yesterday, with my immediate family, I have two small children. I have a father who just had open heart surgery, and I have a grandmother who is in the high risk category because of her age. It's not about me getting the virus, but it's about me protecting them so that I don't pass it on to them. So if I go into a restaurant that's not wearing face masks or a retail store, I'm going to be hesitant to shop with you because I have other people to keep safe that I'm worried about. And I think citizens need to remember that. It's so much beyond ourselves. It's all the people that we come in contact with. The mask mandate has been challenged legally. On the news, they recently were reporting, I believe there's 30 states now that have mask mandates. Kentucky is the only one that's legally, or at that time was the only one that's legally challenging it. So I'm curious how that will end, but I think we should hear something soon on that. Whether or not it's continued to be challenged, I don't think it's going to go away, whether that's changing wording or whatever it may need to be due to stick. But I really think it is in the best interest. It's become such a political issue, which is really unfortunate because it's a safety precaution. It's nothing that should ever be looked at as political. If you don't want to wear a mask, I think that's fine and that's your decision, but you may not be able to go into all the stores that other people go into. And that's just a compromise that people are going to have to be willing to take. You know, we don't want people to come to our community and not feel safe here, or we don't want families of MSU students when they come in to not feel like they're leaving their children in a safe community because people aren't abiding these mandates. And that affects all of us. It affects us from a community standpoint. It affects us from a tax standpoint, from an economy standpoint. And so those are things that we have to think about. It's much bigger than just wearing a mask.
Now, one other thing that I wanted to touch base on before we go into the agenda from this month. Last month, the budget for the next fiscal year was passed by the City Council. You and I didn't get the chance to really discuss that, but I imagine that the financial outlook for the next year has really changed, considering the fact that we lost, as a community, well, as a country, as a world, a full quarter of revenue so everyone is impacted in this way. But how has it impacted the city, and how did it impact planning for the next fiscal year?
It was very difficult to kind of plan our budget because so much of it is focused on projections of estimated revenue income based on taxes, property taxes, occupational taxes, as well as the Morehead Round County Tourism Commission is part of our budget and the Morehead Utility Plant Board. And so both of those entities have to project loss of revenue as well. So what we did was Kentucky League of Cities, which we are part of that association, helped provide guidance for how we can plan. So they were a great resource for us. We projected a 20% loss of revenue. That's just kind of something that's been estimated among communities. So that's what we kind of used as a guideline for planning there. So we did decrease all of our revenues by that percentage. And then we also cut out all capital projects that originally had been presented and proposed in the budget, with the exception of the new police and 911 facility. That's the one project that we did still leave in the budget. What we have done is we have asked departments to be very, very careful with their spending. If there's items or equipment or resources that you don't have to have right now, we're asking them not to spend that money. Kind of somewhat of a spending freeze. But with some flexibility there based on programming needs. And as things reopen, we know that that will change. We're expecting a lot of budget amendments. I know we will likely already have one in August. So people can look to see those. They're going to be somewhat typical in this next fiscal year. The biggest revenue loss will be seen, like I said, in the tourism category, because they're solely funded by restaurant, alcohol, and transient room tax. And those are the taxes that have been hit most significantly because restaurants had to close periodically. Bars were not open. People were not traveling as much to stay in hotels. They have estimated a significant cut to their budget as well. I believe around $600,000 was one of the initial amounts that they had reduced their budget by. So they're hoping to kind of see that in the next quarter will be where we can really base those numbers off of.
And we're going to get into the agenda for this month's meeting, but first we're going to take a quick break here on Open Mic. We'll be right back after this.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, what can a congressional election in the Bronx tell us about the direction of the Democratic Party? It turns out, a lot.
There have been few candidates in the race who have spent more time attempting to assassinate my character as an LGBTQ candidate than that of Ruben Diaz Sr., who is a vicious homophobe.
That's this week on Latino USA. Saturday mornings at 7 on WMKY at 90.3 FM.
Right now, we all might feel a little disconnected. For seniors living alone with smaller social circles, feelings of loneliness and isolation can feel overwhelming. But there's something we can all do to help. Connect with your older loved one virtually and have the conversation of a lifetime with StoryCorps Connect. Anyone can conduct an interview, and every interview will be archived at the Library of Congress, becoming part of American history. Connect, honor, share at StoryCorpsConnect.org/AARP. A message from AARP, StoryCorps, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Open Mic here on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with the mayor of Morehead, Laura White Brown. Thanks so much for being on the show, Laura.
I'm happy to be here, Leanne.
We wanted to talk a little bit about the city council agenda. The meeting happened Monday night via Zoom, as you guys have been conducting since the pandemic began. Let's talk a little bit. You gave the mayor's report. One of the things that you've been doing is holding some focus groups.
Absolutely. You know, the country as a whole has seen a major movement, the Black Lives Matter movement. We had a protest here, a peaceful protest, which had a significant turnout and was a really phenomenal event within our community. But from that came the need to really have an open conversation about diversity of our community, diversity on representation of our boards and community leadership. And so I've started a few different focus groups. I have two going right now to just discuss how can we really implement being a welcoming and diverse community. We always say that, you know, I know I've said it so many times. I want Morehead to be so welcoming and open. But what does that really mean? And so I've been reaching out to community members, to people in athletics, to coaches, to longtime citizens, a variety of different people, of different mindsets, of different opinions, and asking, you know, what does that mean to you? And if you think we're not as diverse as we could be, or we're not as welcoming as we could be, how do we change that? What are some things that we can implement so that we truly are behind that mission within our community? And I have to say, it has been one of the most motivating and eye-opening experiences of my career. To hear opinions and stories from people in the community is very challenging at times, but it also really gives me hope and faith that we have such strong community citizens here that are really devoted to creating a phenomenal place for everyone that wants to live here.
One of the discussions that was brought up during your report, of course, you mentioned briefly before the police and 911 center, police station and 911 center are still moving forward, although we haven't really seen anything happen. You know, there's still the sign there in the area where it's going to be built. But tell us where we are on that project.
I, as much as you, until I see progress, it often doesn't feel like it's happening. There are so many meetings that we've been having for the design phase of this building. We have gotten to the point where the designs are almost finished. I believe they're expected to be finished and presented the end of July. We will likely have a special call council meeting or in the August meeting with the estimated cost final proposal, which City Council will have the opportunity to vote on. From that point, everything will go out to bid, and they are hoping to break ground in October.
One of the big questions that a lot of individuals have had concerning youth and the reopening and things happening are, of course, sports leagues. I know a lot of information or a lot of things have not been happening with the Parks and Recreation Department because of the shutdown. And so with City League Sports, what's the plan and is there going to be sports anytime soon?
I'm happy to report that we are in the stages of planning a fall ball series. And so that will be baseball and softball for ages 6 through 12. We're hoping to start taking signups the beginning of August for that and plan to implement it around August 20th, pending that nothing changes with the pandemic guidelines or state guidelines. We want people to know that how it looks to attend a game as a spectator is going to be very different. You know, from the setting of the teams, it will be very different. Teams won't necessarily be allowed to sit together in the dugout, things like that. We'll have to have spectators sit with family groups and spread 6 feet apart and also wear masks. And so it's going to have a different look, but we're hoping it'll still have a great feel, an opportunity for youth to learn and also be active. We are still in discussion with some state Parks and Recreation Task Force about soccer and football and indoor basketball. Those are kind of the other leagues that we usually have at the end of the year. We are not sure right now what the guidance will be on all of those. I know soccer is one of the biggest programs that we have. There's so many people hoping we could do that. And we're certainly trying to find a way where we can abide guidelines and still offer that program.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of sports and entertainment, that kind of brings me to the next item on the agenda that I wanted to touch base on. There was some discussion about the Entertainment Destination Center, the Entertainment District in downtown Moorhead, which we're actually seeing some progress on with the closing of Bats and Oats Drive.
We are. I'm really excited about this project. It's been a long time in the works and a long time coming. I think we've been working on the ordinance for this for almost a year now. But one good thing that came out of this pandemic is that it did give us the opportunity to go ahead and do that street closure. So we were able to kind of temporarily implement that and see how it goes, which helped with this ordinance as a whole. So City Council passed the first reading of the ordinance, which allows for Thursday through Sunday for Bats and Oats to be closed, and then also to have alcohol from a licensed vendor be taken to that outdoor seating area or to walk from one business to another if you would like. We extended the area of that district, so it goes from La Finca's down to IGA, kind of all of Main Street in that area. There's a part of First Street which is included, and then Bats and Oats is included in that also. The unique thing about this area is that while it will be closed Thursdays through Sundays for people to enjoy, we also have the ability to close it any day of the week for a special event. So if there's Freedom Fest that falls on a Tuesday, we're able to do that as well. And so it really kind of opens up the opportunity there. One thing that we still have to wait for is final approval from the Alcohol Beverage Control Department in Frankfort, because this does kind of count as an open container policy within special events in that in those specific days. But right now, with the pandemic, that's a slow process, but getting this ordinance passed was the first step. And I really think there's a huge big picture to create a great community environment with this project.
And then finally, we just got a couple more minutes left here on Open Mic. I wanted to discuss the first reimbursement report for the CARES Act money that the city has applied for.
The city was approved for $548,000 of CARES Act money, which will really help us significantly in our budget. We submitted our first proposal for reimbursement. It was around $340,000. The majority of that was towards police and fire salaries. Both departments have had significant overtime since the pandemic started. There were also a few items there, things like face masks and extra disinfectant, things like that are needed to protect both employees and the community. So those items were also included in that first proposal.
Now, do you anticipate there will be another proposal that is turned in?
We do. I expect that we will apply for that full $548,000 that was allotted to us. We are able to do it kind of in phases or in sections. So this was just the first phase of that amount. Mm-hmm.
And on that note, that's all the time we have here on Open Mic. Mayor Laura White Brown, Mayor of Moorhead, thank you so much for being here. I really do appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for tuning in to Open Mic. Our show is produced by Greg Jenkins, and our theme music is Turtle in the Creek, composed by Galen Green and performed by The Wooks. Produced by Moorhead State Public Radio with the generous support of listeners just like you. We'll see you next Friday.